Welcome to Untold Stories, a production of the Florida Theater and WJCT Public Media. Tonight's program was recorded May 30th, 2024. The theme, spring.
So, Alexis Alexander, you know, I've seen her. We have mutual friends. But about a month ago, maybe two, it had to be at least two, she was in my space, and she was hosting an event that Love Reigns was producing, yay. And it was this fabulous event, and she was the host. And she would go out there, and she was amazing. She interacted. They had like a kind of a club atmosphere, and she just was funny, and she was fabulous. And when she came back into the green room, I said, wow, you're a really good host. She's like, really? This is my first time. I'm like, this is your first time hosting? We need to talk. So I started telling her about Untold Stories and to think about spring and summer, if she had any stories that connected to the theme. And that's how she is here tonight. It's been fabulous to work with her. So give her a big round of applause, Alexis Alexander.
Babs is right, you all look really wonderful. For as beautiful as you look, you're incredibly intimidating. How rude. When I say storytelling, you say it's good. Storytelling.
It's good.
Storytelling.
It's good.
It's good. Thank you for exchanging with me. Around adolescence, an interesting phenomenon begins to take shape in us humans. We begin to find our self-identity, and it doesn't stop ever, really. In fact, it starts off as behavior matching. We act and dress and sound like the people who give the biggest influence over us, and then we slowly experience life, and we differentiate into our own unique little snowflake. And for me, that looked like watching my mom do single mother stuff for three girls and take care of both of her parents until they both succumbed to terminal illnesses. And so when I turned 12 and my mother was diagnosed with a terminal illness of her own, I didn't need to know what lupus or chronic renal failure was. I just kind of sprung into action. At 12, I got my first job. And at 12, I started paying bills. And I didn't know it, but at 12, I would begin a lifelong journey of caregiving. And so, as you can imagine, at this very impressionable time, this really drew us very close together. And in 2006, when I had my daughter, we became even tighter. We would make jokes about not knowing where she ended and I began, because honestly, a lot of our stories overlapped. So much so that when I saw her suffering in my 20s, I began asking her, Mom, why don't you let me donate a kidney to you? And year after year, my mother refused until I turned 27. This was the year that she finally said yes. And it wasn't some great epiphany. It was because the quality of her life had deteriorated, because honestly, these diseases are hell on anybody. And so we began the process of living donor kidney donation. And it's a very arduous screening over months and many appointments. They assess us physically, financially, emotionally, mentally. They're making sure that we're ready to commit to such a grand undertaking. And at every turn, my answer was always the same. Yes, I want to do it. Yes, I'm ready. And so we went through that process and we got to the appointment where it's time for us to schedule our surgical dates. And the doctor had some news for us. He apologized and he said that I was no longer a good, suitable donor for my mother because she had developed antibodies against me and complications from blood transfusions in her dialysis. And so he said, go on with your lives, but we'll put you on the donor kidney registry. This is a list of other incompatible pairs like us, and if a match comes up, they give us a call. And he said, but your best bet is to go on with your life because it could happen in a month and it could happen in a year. And for some people, it never happens. And so my mother and I picked up the pieces, like we did everything together. And we went forward and we were really, really blessed because a year later, we did get that call. We got the call and we went into surgery with 7 other pairs like us all across the country, 14 people kind of holding hands, and this chain that liberated us all. Now I remember laying in that hospital bed, staring into the bright lights in the ceiling, not unlike these lights out here tonight, and thinking to myself, this feels like a portal, like maybe something beautiful is on the other side. And I started counting back from 10, and the next thing I remember is waking up in my recovery suite. And it was interesting because I had this flowery recovery in my head, but when I woke up, this was the worst pain I ever felt in my life. And as I sat there in agony, I was talking to the doc, oh, is this normal? And he said, Alexis, we cut a major organ out of your body. It is gone. We sewed you back up. You are living that reality. Meanwhile, my mother was in her recovery suite and she practically cartwheeled out the bed. The doctors let us know that this is because she's been missing something critical for a long time and now she has it. And life changed for us after that, honestly. I ended up taking a job with a company right here in Jacksonville, and although I lived in Ohio, I traveled for 5 years with them, and I really enjoyed what I did. In fact, it was going so well that in 2019, they gave me a call, said, hey, Lexi, we want to promote you into management, IT management, and we want to move you to Jacksonville. And so I discussed it with the two ladies in my life, my mother, my daughter, and I made that move to Jacksonville. However, I should have seen the foreshadowing because on the way down as I drove the U-Haul, I got a call. They told me that there was a ransomware attack, and you don't need to know anything about that except that it meant I was working with my new peers and the FBI for the next year trying to untangle all the damage that had been done to the data that we house. The following year, something else important happened. COVID-19 hit. It turned the workplace upside down, and it also turned the whole world upside down. And so, for the first 2.5 years that I lived here in Jacksonville, I really wasn't in Jacksonville at all. I was here in my head. I was at the computer. I was on the phone. And I began feeling this unrest, this invisible injury that was progressively worsening. And although on paper, I was meeting all of my salary goals. My daughter had adjusted extremely well. My mom was being taken care of now by my sisters back home in Ohio, but there was something inside of me that just was not okay. I couldn't explain it to other people. I tried many things, but what I decided is that I need to go to my happy place. Jamaica! I know that's somebody's happy place in here. I went to Jamaica, and I decided to plan this trip over a few months because this wasn't just a trip. For me, I felt so compelled to do this that I felt like God wants me to be a dual resident in Jamaica and the U.S. Clearly, God wants me to live well. And so I said, I'll visit multiple parishes, I'll visit Jamaica and decide where I want to live. And so here I am, 2 days before my trip, 2 days before the flight, and I'm packing. And that is a feat for me because I am a pack right before I leave out the door type of gal. And I was doing that, and I got a call on the phone. It was my mom. Cookie, I'm so sorry, baby. She went on to tell me that she couldn't fly down to sit with my daughter for those 6 weeks anymore. She was back in renal failure. And it wasn't just beginning. She was at the point that she needed to go back on dialysis, and this was devastating for us. So I mustered all the encouragement I could, and I filled her up as much as I possibly could, and I hung up the phone, and I collapsed into the floor. I needed this trip. Y'all don't understand. I needed this trip. And so as I sat there crying into my iPhone 11, my best friend called me, Antoinette. Hey girl, you better be packing because I know how you are. Pack. I met her with silence, very unlike me. She said, what's wrong? I said, can I vent? And I did. I told her what had happened, how my mom couldn't come down, and clearly this must mean that it's over for the trip. And so we released the call. She gave me good energy like she always does. And I began unpacking. And 10 minutes later, my phone rang again. Antoinette again. This time, she didn't even say hello. She said, can you pick me up at the airport at midnight? What airport? What are you talking about? I'm in Florida, girl. Are you crazy? She had decided in that split second that she was going to consult with her husband and her and their son. They were going to come down to Florida so they could vacation in my home while I vacationed in Jamaica. And I said, girl, that'll work. And I spent the next 2 days scrambling, putting things together. It was literally a flurry of energy just trying to prepare my home and prepare myself to go on this trip. And when I did, finally find myself sitting in that seat on that flight on the way to Montego Bay, I said, I deserve a victory drink because this has been a journey already. And I reached into my purse and pulled out my credit card, my expired credit card. And I said, no, it's okay. I forgot the replacement is in the mail, but it's okay, I have my cash. And I reach, and nothing. And I am slowly realizing on this flight that I am on my way to a foreign country with no money, alone. I couldn't call my mom, she was going through her thing. I couldn't call my best friend, she had done enough for me already, so I decided I gotta think my way through this. I knew I'd be arriving in Jamaica, I knew King would be there. King is he has a tour business, Kings and Queens Jamaica, and he was gonna be there to greet me, the only person I knew in Jamaica. And I just went with my gut. My gut said, girl, you can trust him, tell him about it, come up with something. So I landed, and there King was with his big white smile, Lexi! And he grabbed me up, welcome home, because they call it home once you've been there. And so I packed up from him, and I said, King, no, I have a problem, and it's a big one. We ended up putting our heads together, and what we decided is that I need to send this man $1,500, because that was the limit. And I had to send it to a friend of his. He was already at his limit for withdrawals. Someone I never met. And I said, is this smart? I did it anyway because that's what I decided my plan was. And she came through. The woman gave me the money and I had the trip that I intended to have. I went from parish to parish. And when I got to Ochi, I checked into my Airbnb. And there was an on-site manager, and there was a group of girls that had checked into another little apartment on the property, and we hit it off. And the manager told us, we're going to have a pool party. And I said, yeah, I like pools. I like parties. And we went to this pool party, and I started noticing there's a strange man there, a friend of the manager. He's got liquor, and he keeps offering me a drink. I keep saying no. But the girls in the pool, they're having a good time. And I could hear my mom's voice in the back of my head, cook, you trust God and you love your family and everybody else is suspect. That means all of y'all too, suspect. And so I sat back and I watched, and eventually what I saw was the manager and his friend dragging somebody along between their shoulders, somebody who wasn't really conscious. And so I walked up to them because the other folks were distracted in the pool. I said, hey, Does this girl's friends know that you're taking her upstairs? And they said, oh, yeah, go back to the pool party, it's fine. And so I turned to go back to the pool party, but something in my gut just wouldn't let me let that go. So I snuck up the stairs behind them. And what I saw when I pushed the apartment door open to where they had gone was that young lady sprawled out across the couch. She was in and out of consciousness. I ran back to grab her friend. We rescued her from that apartment, and the very next day we all spoke, two of those girls had something slipped into their drinks. We immediately checked out, and this was a crazy event, but the rest of my trip really was a wonderful experience. I ended up flying home. When I got there, of course, people were asking, Lexi, when are you moving? This caused me to really reflect on the trip I had just taken. Not just Jamaica, but every event leading up to it. I realized that I'm really good at responding to duress and trauma, but I also realized I don't know who I am when I'm not serving other people. And I realized also that perhaps Jacksonville can be my happy place too, you know? I really hadn't given Jacksonville a chance, and so I started to do just that. I leaned into my poetry more. I started going to open mics at Floating Sea Aquatics, if you guys know it. It's hosted by Ryan Sinclair and Love Rains. I also started painting. Did y'all know I paint? I paint, and actually this month is my 1 year anniversary of having my first collection featured in a gallery exhibit at Femme Art Gallery. Shout out to them. Thank you. I also decided to hang up my corporate hat because although corporate America was really good to me, my credit score was like a 745 at that time. It was really good to me, but I needed something that made this version of me feel fulfilled. And so I did that too. I started working with the Performance Academy off Beach Boulevard, which offers free arts education to youth. I also started doing some things with Hope at Hand. Thank you, clap for them, because they do amazing work. I started working with Hope at Hand as well, which allows me to facilitate poetry workshops for recovering addicts. This is all work that means something to me. And I realized that I had spent so much time watering other people's gardens, I didn't know what was growing in mine, y'all. It was just a little raggedy mess. So I started growing, and what you see before you today is a blossoming creature. Even to this day, I continue that caregiving journey too. My mother was just admitted to the hospital 2 days ago. I wasn't sure if I'd be on the stage today to share this story with you. But because it has meant so much for me to be able to blossom in a space like Jacksonville where people care about who I become, I'm able to share that in communities. And so today, I wanted to make sure that I graced this stage to be able to share this story with you so that you too can feel encouraged to blossom. Thank you.
Untold Stories is a production of the Historic Florida Theater in partnership with WJCT Public Media. Barbara Colicello is the artistic director. Numa Saislin is the president of the Florida Theater. Jeremy Moore and Eric Stanfield recorded the live performances of Untold Stories. The Untold Stories broadcast and podcast was produced by Brady Corum and Letitia Barriola. Saul Lucio is the technical director. The live performances of Untold Stories were made possible by a generous gift from the Wolfberg family.